Hey, it's Scott MacArthur, co-host of Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac. If you're hearing this, please follow the link in the show description to subscribe to our new feed for more great sports talk and interviews from Ashley Docking, Mike Zigomanis, and me.
Thank you for calling Pizza Pizza.
Yes, I'd like to make a reservation for four.
I'm happy to take your order, but you don't need a reservation.
Excuse me?
You want to try the new gourmet thins, right?
How'd you know?
This has been happening a lot lately. It's a 10-inch thin crust, perfectly sized for one. Or get a few to share, like creamy truffle or pesto amore. And sir, no jacket required.
What about a tie?
New gourmet thins, $7.29 each. Call or order with the app for pickup or delivery only at Pizza Pizza.
967-1111, order pizzapizza.ca.
Lead off with Ashley.
Everybody's being so nice to me today. I'm really happy being here.
Ziggy.
Do you have any water? I gotta hydrate.
I got tap water.
Are you kidding?
And Scotty Mack.
He can't help but talk. He's got something to say about everything.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So it's a really bad way to start a radio show on any day, but especially a Friday, by saying I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about the football game last night. I don't want to talk about it.
If everybody's with me, knock on wood.
That's a piece of glass. And if you knocked any harder, you might shatter this table.
Where are we going with you?
John Gruden, doesn't he do that in the room? Every time he says something, then he goes to the guys, knock on wood.
Is that what he does?
Yeah.
I haven't watched one of
Raiders insider, Mike Zigomanis. We will interview him later at 8:30.
Suddenly become the biggest fan of this team. Oh,
is that just a lovely way to wake up?
Can I just say to you, if you have DM'd me on Instagram and expressed the fact that in the last few weeks you have become a diehard Raiders fan, you're welcome. You're welcome. So we have to reset just in case someone is joining us for the first time. I made a stupid comment at the start of September on the air before the NFL season began, and I said that if the Oakland Raiders made the playoffs, I would cut my hair like Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, and wear it for a week. Now, this is not a one-week deal, because if you cut your hair like Mark Davis and wear it for a week, you then have to shave your head afterward and let your hair grow back to its normal length, which will take months. So I am effectively about to become a victim for the entirety of the winter, because last night's game, it doesn't put the Raiders into the playoffs, but now we can't ignore the conversation that it's very much a reality.
Well, their schedule's easy going there in the rest of the way.
They got some games. They're at the Chiefs. They're at the Chargers. They do have some potential hiccups, but they've got the Jets and the Bengals. And I think the Bills are on the schedule. They've got the Titans. Absolutely. They've got a path to 10 or 11 wins here at, you know, and I don't think it's unrealistic to think they could get there.
Well, when I'm watching that game last night, doesn't the Chargers have one of the best D's
yes.
in the league? And then what happened on the game winning drive? Like, they looked like no one was on the field.
Well, Jacobs is really good. So there's that. They got some good offensive line action throughout parts of the game, and really both teams couldn't establish themselves in a dominant way all game, right? You have Rivers giving up some
serving up some pizzas,
serving up some ducks, some errant throws. They go pick for 3 points, they settle for a field goal, then the Raiders go pick six, they go up 10, but then, you know, the Chargers, they kept letting the Chargers back in. They scored at the end of the first half to kind of take the lead. The Chargers came back in, and then the Raiders ended up dominating. Both quarterbacks got sacked. Both quarterbacks got shaken up. I don't necessarily think that either team is happy with the all-around game in this one, even though it was a close finish.
No, but the feeling around both teams is different, right?
Yep.
The Raiders are all of a sudden in a playoff conversation, mm-hmm. and weren't expecting it. The Los Angeles Chargers lose for the sixth time. I believe they're going into their bye at 4-6. The AFC is weak, but LA has to sweep now. Well, they got to win out.
And it's demoralizing because all their losses have been one possession games.
Right.
So they look back in their bye week and they're saying every single thing was a winnable opportunity for us here and we've really blown it.
They've got a plus point differential. The Los Angeles Chargers do. The Raiders have given up, I think, 32 more points than they've scored. And yet Oakland is 5-4. The Chargers are 4-6. Here's the bigger question, and I think we can get into it with Charles Davis. You don't make decisions in week 10 necessarily with more football to play, but Phillip Rivers' contract is up at the end of the season. And a game like last night's, there was at least one interception that was overturned on a defensive penalty. And he was also, as you detailed, Ashley, throwing crucial picks at crucial times. He was, and there was Phillip face all over the field last night.
When he comes off the field like that, it's just, and I praise him for his interviews. I'm like, man, I want this guy to be my mentor. And this guy, the way he talks so positive, then you see him come off the field like that.
It's just his face.
But if I'm a teammate, I'm like, I don't want my captain to do that.
He's just highly intense.
I don't mind a little bit. Like, I want to see that from some guys that don't say much, but that's just too much
for
me.
It's just his face. He just looks like that. You can't tell someone to go fix their face.
Yeah.
It's just what it looks like. It's just his face. He's a downturned mouth. I'm sorry. He's a grumpy cat.
He's got BRT.
I don't know what to say.
Is it, or RBT?
RBT.
Resting. Yeah.
RBF.
RB. Oh, yeah. RBT.
I was like, where's the T coming from?
Like, yeah, go with the, what T?
Well, I'm out of sorts.
It's okay. There's some good news. The local Toronto team was.
Well, yes.
They got the dub last night.
They did. It was scoreless after two periods.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. And I thought yesterday morning, Mike Babcock really set the tone for the entire day.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Thanks.
You ever been to the TFC game and had an Italian sausage there? They're unfriggin' believable. Unbelievable. What's going on?
Okay, so first of all, the comedy.
Yeah.
He didn't even leave a pause after the sausage remark before getting to what's going on to facilitate the laugh. Like, it was...
Well, he's trying to lighten everybody up. He knows he knows when he's going to get grilled. And he comes in with something.
Speaking of grilled, have you had one of those sausages?
Yes.
He's not lying.
They are good.
Here's the thing. Mike Babcock does a lot of puppeteering in the media. This is just straight up facts. I will say, I am with him on this one 1,000%. But I think that you're right. There is a certain ploy to it. But the one thing that I do love about this media market is that if Mike Babcock came to the podium every day with some kind of food review, some kind of local establishment take, we would be talking about that every morning. He has infinite power over what we discuss. And I really wish, just for, you know, S's and G's, that he would take more advantage of that.
But he screws with us too on the hockey stuff.
Yeah.
Like we were obsessing over Spezza for like 2 or 3 days the first week of the season because he didn't play him on opening night.
Yeah, but that was actually disrespectful.
Well, I agree.
Yeah, but he talks about things that you kind of, whatever the hot topic is, he'll say something about something else. And it's like, okay, you completely forget about what you want to talk about. And then all of a sudden it's an issue about something that's not that big of a deal.
Right.
Well, so do we not give him enough credit then for being a player's coach? And bear with me here. If I know that Scotty Mack is under the gun and he had a terrible performance yesterday. I'm not saying that you did, but just in case.
But I may have.
And I get called into the boss's office and I know what's coming. I'm going to get grilled about Scott and his lack of professionalism.
Incompetency.
Or whatever the case may be. I'm going to go ahead and be like, hey, let's talk about
Italian sausages at the Toronto FC case.
Let's talk about the soda water in your mini fridge, Dave Cadeau. I don't know.
Talk about
just switch it up a little bit. So as much as he does also use the media as ammunition to quote unquote motivate his players and maybe call them out through there, I think there is an element too of him trying to flip the script when it's something that it's been harped on for too long.
And when you hear this narrative that people want are calling for him to get fired, let's look at this situation. 700 wins, 8th coach to do that. You can say what you want about him, but that is one feat that is really difficult. And if you look at the names that are on that list, he's one of the best coaches ever. You can hear Chris Chelios talk about him and other former veterans that talk about him. And that's just one of those things where he's respected by this team. How many coaches coach this long with an organization and still have the respect of the team? he still has it. And that's something where this nothing that's happened with the Leafs, when things aren't going well, he's not the reason for it. So I hate keep hearing that narrative that it's Mike Babcock's fault. He's the reason. Change it up. The guys have given up on him. They haven't. He's a great coach. He's been in the league this long. And he's the guy for this team right now.
So what's the happy medium then? Because clearly Babcock wants this team to play a particular way. And it isn't necessarily in line with the way that the best players or some of the best players on this team perform at their best, right? Like that free flowing up and down the ice.
But this is the problem though. When you have a team like the Leafs right now, it's somewhat younger, correct?
Yes.
And at some point he's hammering home messages where we need to start on time. We need to, all the cliches, we need to play a full game. That's been a problem this year. It's been inconsistent at times. He says this stuff. We need to play with a little bit more jam. And at some point, you can't keep saying those same things. You become a broken record. And he's right when he says it's the guys in the room that have to start doing it. You can't. The coach can't hammer it home.
Can we stop with the young team, though? Like, we really do need to stop with that.
Well, they are young, but the problem they're getting paid like they're veterans.
No, but they're not inexperienced. Being young and being inexperienced are two different things. And if you're young and you're 22 years old just out in these Toronto streets, fine. If you're young and you're 22 years old and you're a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs and you're in your fourth season and you've been groomed to play professional hockey for your entire career, there's a different standard that you're held to. So are some silly mistakes going to happen once in a while because of that inexperience, quote unquote? Yes. But when you're coming up on 5 years, when you're closer to 5 years than your rookie year, then young, quote unquote, is so relative. I don't know if they're making excuses for like a Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado. Are they like, oh, he's so young, it's okay, he doesn't need to play up to standard? I don't know if they were making excuses for a Sidney Crosby when he was in the, oh, he's so young, it's okay. It's the narrative is a cop-out to a certain extent. And even though there is an ounce of truth to it, and again, I don't expect these quote-unquote young guys to be perfect, but they are still in leadership positions and expected to drive the success of this team.
Well, they are paid to drive the success of the team, without question. I mean, because I think there are still people out there who feel like this team's cap is a complete and total mess. I mean, this is a group that is not going to carry an extra skater once Zach Hyman comes back as a result of the salary cap. It's paying four guys half of the cap.
But Scotty, so many teams are up against the cap. 16 teams or something are right up against it. They're like $500,000 away from it. So it's not a problem specifically to Toronto. And I understand what you mean.
But the dollars are spread around more on most teams.
I understand the makeup of it for sure. But just to say it's a cap problem, a lot of people are up against the cap.
Well, what I'm saying is I'm reinforcing your point. The four guys have to perform regardless of age because they're chewing up half of the salary cap. So if it's not them, who is it?
Yeah, they're the ones, and too much is allocated towards four guys. I don't understand. I've said it before. I'm not sure what the Leafs are doing with it. And the one thing is, let's just get all our guys under contract. Let's keep guys happy, and then let's work with it. And right. That's what they're doing. And is it going to work? We're going to find
TBD.
Out. TBD. We're going to find out, right? But back to the whole roster thing. Carrying 20 players on a road trip out west could be dangerous. What if they carry... Well, they're going to have to carry six defensemen. And 12. And then somebody gets hurt. You're going to go into a game with five defensemen?
No, you just throw someone back there.
Riley's not practicing. CC hasn't been great. Barry, I'm not sure what's wrong. He hasn't played to his ability with the Leafs compared to what he did with the Avalanche last year. This is one of the best D-men in the league.
He needs more power play time.
And Paul Coffey in studio yesterday kind of talked about it. Maybe he'll get the opportunity to go on the first power play unit. Again, he's being asked to do something that's maybe against his nature a little bit. We all know that when you're playing sports, you have an affinity to either stick back and defend or you have an affinity to jump in the play. And then those things are fostered. He's obviously more offensive. But guys, like, there are some positives to take away from the game last night. And I feel like we owe it to this Maple Leafs team to at least bring those up, because there are a lot of negative things that we've harped on in the last little while. And those are also fair. I think that the Leafs have been ripe for the picking when it comes to critical analysis. Frederik Andersen, phenomenal yesterday. Absolutely outstanding. Same with his counterpart and Malcolm Subban on the other side of the ice. Great goaltending, I believe. And I will say, we talk about players who make big money. Auston Matthews, I thought he was really good last night. I really, really did. I thought he had desire. I thought he was determined. And I think he carried his weight.
He started off a little bit slow. And you want to see more of what you saw out of him in the second period. You want to see that early. And a little bit in the third. He has to come out and play like that. Auston Matthews is the Nathan MacKinnon. When I can see him play like MacKinnon, that's kind of when the time where he's taken the next step. Because he can do what MacKinnon does. And that's the one player. I don't know. I hear the Matthews is like a supplemental player that's playing like he's on a fringe. I hear that narrative. I'm starting to hear a little bit of that now.
Saying that?
A lot he of can't people. Be. He's a perimeter player. And I'm saying, you know what? If that does happen, this team's in big trouble, because he's not that guy. He's going to be the MacKinnon on this team.
He's got to be the best player on this team.
I agree.
Every night.
Yeah. And if he's not, it's trouble. I thought Marner was good yesterday. He was good on the power play. He makes good seam passes. He opens the ice up. He kills penalties. I want to talk about the PK. PK was great on both sides. And special teams, it did come down to that. And the Toronto PK, I liked it. Vegas PK, that was one of the best setups I've seen against the Leafs all year. Kind of back in F1 and F2, forced Toronto to shoot the puck. They were doing that. The thing that Vegas did really well, though, is they collapsed to the net. So as soon as you put that puck towards the net, there's somebody always there on their team to put it down the ice. But you know what that does? Then it forces you to hang on the puck a little bit longer and look for the perfect shot. And that's when the Toronto PP started to look awful, right? Came out the first couple.
Well, and that, because Tavares is a slot guy more this year, but that's his office, right? Right down by the net, or Andreas Janssen, as the case is sometimes. That seam pass isn't there.
And they've started to do different things. But it's almost when they start to do different things, they're almost overthinking the power play. And that's never good, especially when you have that high-end skill. So things don't, you start off, you're moving the puck around, you're getting some good looks, then all of a sudden it's brutal. You don't have anything, puck's going down, you can't get in the zone. A lot of times then you're like, hey, let's try this play, that play. It almost looked, I don't want to say overcoached, but they were it looked forced on the ice. And that nothing good is going to come out of that when that happens.
Well, we know that teams in this day and age, I mean, they'll give you the point shot, right? Because that is considered as low a percentage scoring opportunity on the power play or in any situation as there is in that setup.
And you want, and the point shot is dangerous when when it gets through with traffic and guys in front of the net, but we know it's hard, right? You have a high tip, you have a bumper in the middle guy. Most teams run a 1-3-1. So that's one guy at the top, three guys across the middle, and one guy in front of the net. And they run different variations off that. But yeah, once you get that shot from the point, if you collapse the way Vegas did last night, it's no real threat. If your goaltender's seeing the puck, Vegas did a good job clearing the lanes, letting Subban see the puck, then your power play, you're not going to generate much. With this Leafs, with the weapons they have, you want a high percentage shot. You don't want that shot from the middle. If your power play isn't great and you don't have the personnel, yes, tee it up from the middle. You don't have the middle, tee it up from the flanks, guys on the side. That's what you want. You don't think about the power plays that didn't work for the Leafs, passing it around the perimeter. What came of that? Nothing. Nothing comes out of that. When you're just moving it around the outside, you're like, okay, let's get the perfect shot. Then when you don't get it, you're like, this is another wasted power play.
Well, and then they start to force it, and then I found that they couldn't hold the blue line on a number of occasions, especially the first power play opportunity in the third before Auston was just like, give me the puck, shot, rebound, shot.
and talking about Auston, the power play, how about his goal? Two lost sticks for Vegas. That kind of stood out.
You liked what Marner did on that play.
It was so smart.
Yeah, I know Elliot said this last night. It almost looked like he backed up into the stick, because you can't fire that stick away, right? As soon as you touch it, it's a penalty. So you have to leave it where it is. but he backed up into it. And the ref can't call that penalty because it's like he doesn't know it's there. But
it was so good. It was
yeah, he's so smart.
Skating backwards, like, do. I'm like, you're doing that exactly on purpose, Mitchell.
But here's one thing. Here's another thing they didn't talk about last night. It's that Braden McNabb lost his stick. It was, and I think the bench was not happy because I think it was Johnson knocked it out of McNabb's hands. He goes to pick it up, which I like. If it's going to take you half a second, go and pick it up, get back in the play, because you don't want to be without a stick as a defenseman or a penalty killer in that matter. That opened up the lane for Matthews to come down the side and take that shot. He had another second and a half, and he didn't have a defenseman, if you remember the play. McNabb was trying to come back into the box in a formation. That gave the lane for Matthews in that shot. When you give him that amount of time and space, I mean, bar in, I don't know who's going to stop that shot from that tight end. It's just not going to happen.
Freddie was brilliant, just to reinforce Ashley's point. And that's key. The month is now November.
Love side, baby.
You know?
Yeah.
So Freddie always, as we've said, three of his four Octobers in Toronto have been meh at best, this one included. But November has been the time that he's always turned it around. And they're absolutely going to ride this horse. I'll say this. Freddie is in the bottom half of starting goaltenders in the National Hockey League in terms of AAV on his contract. He makes $5 million a year. He is clearly in the top half of goaltenders in terms of performance and play in the National Hockey League. So the Leafs have had significant value there for the last number of seasons. The key, of course, will be the conversation in April when the playoffs roll around.
And when you talk about, when you talk about goaltenders and how they play, listen to what other players say about him. They say it's not the fact that he's playing well. For me, when I'm in a game, it's the fact that it's the timeliness of the saves that are huge. And you notice it as a player. You notice it even more as a coach. So that's the thing where now I'm like, gosh, we need a save there from our guy, right? I've had that happen in the last couple of years coaching UFT. And I can understand that from Mike Babcock's standpoint. When you're on the bench and you're watching, and Freddie does that.
Right.
And when you're an opposing player, you notice it as well. You're like, We need it something off of that play, off of that chance.
When you're pressing, when you're dominating play, and all of a sudden Freddie makes a play, ices the puck, or freezes the puck, and then you're just like, oh, line change, all that momentum is gone, and they get to reset.
It's like when you're down a goal and you give up, and you have a flurry against, the team's putting a press on you.
And they go in transition.
Yeah. That's the thing. But you want your goaltender to kind of like, we need a stop when we're down by a goal. Those are the big stops, is when you're down.
And you would love that. You're Mr. Hakeem Optical Eye Test over here. So you're like, the stats don't necessarily tell that story. The advanced analytics don't.
Yeah, where are the analytics there? Where's my analytics crew, that my army coming after me?
The analytics army.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for those frames that you're going to be throwing on, too.
Yeah, I've got blue frame. I got blue tinted glasses. Jeez,
who are you, Elton John? Is this where we're going?
What's wrong with Elton John?
Nothing. I'm a huge fan.
He just asked if you are Elton John.
He just wears.
I'm not going to go
tinted
that,
lenses.
I'm not going to go that dark. You want me to go dark? I don't think they're that bad. You can't really notice them.
Are they transitions?
I will be the judge.
Like, will they change?
I do have transitions at home right now, but apparently I need the ones that are just solid the whole time. Especially with the lights.
No, we need to get studio lights. Do you know, and it's typically older people who wear those like bricks around the...
The ones you wear when you get LASIK eye surgery and it protects you from the elements?
But the sunglasses...
You mean with the roof on them?
Right around the sides.
Well, they're
and
meant to
everything.
Go over your glasses.
Yeah. But they have a roof on top. What do you call the top piece? Not the
a
roof.
A visor?
No, it's like the glasses.
No,
but
they're...
You have that top piece that covers what's coming. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. There's
the roof.
Okay. I don't know.
We need to go.
It's just a badass look.
I actually won't be back.
Yeah.
Everyone who's happy about that, yeah, save it. Don't text us. 590-590.
Okay, we should
bowing
wrap
out.
It up here.
Pulling shoot.
Elliot Friedman, Joshua Cloak of The Athletic in the 8 o'clock hour as Toronto FC gets set to take on the Seattle Sounders for the third time in 4 years in the MLS Cup. That goes on Sunday afternoon. We'll tee it up. Charles Davis to talk about the NFL. We'll give away the last opportunity to enter the draw for Leafs tickets. They host the Flyers tomorrow night. And Hugh Burrell will jump in a moment for the six-pack. Now, yesterday, we had Paul Coffey in studio as part of our J.P. Weiser's leadoff series. And we have a J.P. Weiser's Alumni Whiskey Series prize pack to give away. Congratulations to our winner, Lauren Findlay from North York. Now, next Thursday, we'll have Wendell Clark in studio for the full 8 o'clock hour, and we'll be giving away another J.P. Weiser's Alumni Whiskey Series prize pack. You can text alumni to 590-590 right now to enter. Just a reminder, you must be legal drinking age, and standard message and data rates apply. We'll do the six pack with you next.
Subscribe to the Leadoff Podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now let's crack open the six pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
Well, as that handsome fella just told you, the Leafs have won three straight for the first time this year.
Carlson checks up. Marner's right on him. Turned it over. And now Marner's away with it. Has Tavares with him. Here's Marner. Holding Tavares. Scores!
2-1 Leafs the final. Austin Matthews scored the other goal, but the real star of this game was Freddie Anderson. He stopped 37 shots for the win.
Yeah, I definitely felt like, you know, the puck was following me a little bit around, so it's a good feeling. Obviously, you have different nights where, you know, the puck seems to bounce your way, and yeah, I feel good.
Freddie seems to be rounding into form. He's 3-0 in November with a 1.60 goals against and a 951 save percentage.
What teams and what people don't talk about a lot is the way that goaltenders can read plays. Freddie Anderson does that. I was at the game last night, had my spotlight on him. He was having the game of the year, and he's almost moving and looking where the puck is going to go. He's good at reading when guys are going to move the puck instead of shoot.
November, man. I don't know what it is about calendars. And I can't imagine that he's overly aware of this or that he thinks about this stuff, but he turns it on each and every November, regardless of October performance. When the calendar flips, his A game arrives.
It's like what Paul Coffey said about Grant Fuhrer yesterday.
Yeah,
he'd come into the change room after the second period. No more goals. And then that was it. Yeah. You just decided. Calendar changes. That's it. No more goals.
Leafs host the Flyers tomorrow night.
Two.
Well, before last night's game in the afternoon, the Leafs waived forward Nick Petan and defenseman Martin Marincin. The Leafs still need to clear about $600,000 in cap space before the return of Zach Hyman, which should be early next week. So what do we expect to happen now?
Well, are you going to carry six defense and 12 forwards when you go on a Western swing? Now you're calling someone up. You've got the three-hour time change. You've got the five-and-a-half-hour flight. And if a defenseman goes down, gets sick, gets food poisoning, something before a game, you're not going to play five defensemen. Then you're in real trouble, right? We talked about it earlier. Riley, something's bothering him. CeCe and Barry haven't been great. You know, Dermott's just back in the lineup. He only played, whatever, 8 minutes last game. So not carrying an extra player is dangerous when you're on a road trip. It's nice when you have the Marlies here in the same city. When you're at home, you can just go across the hallway and bring a guy up. What are they going to do now? They might have to move somebody.
It's a good point, because after the Flyers are here tomorrow night, the Leafs play 8 of their next 9 away from home.
Yeah, I think 13 of 16 yeah. overall. Here's what I'd do. I'd sneak somebody onto the charter, not let the league know. Just put them up in a different hotel. You just quietly stay away, and if we need you, we'll call you up.
I'd say put them under the bus. That's what they used to do in the OHL. What, put them under the plane? What? I don't know how you're going to get them on.
Yeah, just put them with the cargo.
Yeah.
Throw them in a suitcase.
Or just have them say, hey, maybe you'd like a vacation out in Arizona this time. I'm just saying.
Going to go around a golf or something.
We need stories, though. Were you scraping the street under the bus at some point?
There were.
Holding on to the, like, spare tire?
But there are stories of OHL teams putting, I think, the players from overseas under the bus because they didn't have their visas to cross the border. So that has happened in the past.
Ah, the good old days.
Three.
Well, the Islanders' streak is over.
Now Nelson into the far corner. Bullock being pestered by Malkin. Pushes it behind his net. Russ with a turnover on the wraparound. Stuff attempt. Scores! Brian Rust! And you can lock the doors and turn out the lights, because the Penguins have won this game in overtime. They have come all the way back in Brooklyn. 4-3 the final. Rust the hero.
Oh, the Rusty Razor.
which was also my nickname in high school.
Wait, what?
Brian
that
Rust.
That needs an explanation. No.
You know what? To make that joke better, I should have said that is definitely Ryan Mond's current nickname. Brian Rust, 2 goals of the night, 4-3 Pens the final. Islanders blew a 3-0 lead in this one. So I guess if you're going to have your 10-game winning streak come to an end, why not just have it blow up?
Well, doesn't that's usually the way it happens, but come on. You get up 3 goals in a game and you blow them. I don't care what winning streak you're on. That just can't happen. Sometimes these ones sting a little bit and linger. So that's what I'd kind of look for now with the Islanders. Can they? I don't want to say bounce back because they just won 100 in a row, right?
Yeah.
So when you lose like this, these hurt. This league is so tough. You cannot take your foot off the gas pedal at any time against any opponent. They did that last night. And they took the loss.
Well, and it's the wrong opponent to do that to, right? So this is the difference between pedigree and clubs and what experience means to you. Down 3-0, if you're a lesser team, maybe you kind of pack it in. You're like, okay, what's next on the calendar? We've already moved on. But it's the Pittsburgh Penguins. So the Islanders probably learned a very valuable lesson. You're going to lose some games, and you're going to lose to probably inferior opponents than the Penguins once in a while, but a game like this probably taught them a lot, to be honest.
When you have Crosby and Malkin on your team, and I played with them in 08-09, you are never out of a game with at any score at any time because they can always turn it around.
I wouldn't mind if this is the start of the downturn for the Islanders because the Leafs go there on Wednesday. And then they've got home and home with the Penguins again in like a week and a bit. So... Yeah. Lots of Pittsburgh coming up.
But I think we can all agree that the Islanders are for real. Like this 10-game winning streak, that wasn't a fluke. They are a pretty good hockey team.
Well, I was looking at the numbers when Lamoriello left the Leafs. I believe they have a better record or close record as the Leafs do.
Right.
When he left. So if you look at these lineups, which lineup would you say is better?
Well, you would say the Leafs, but the Leafs. So one of the interesting things on the broadcast is they were talking about it, and one of the accolades that they were giving the Islanders was that every single line is equally as important. Every single line feels like they're empowered to make a change in the game, and they liked the fact on the broadcast that the first line was only playing 17, 18 minutes a game, and that's kind of what Mike Babcock had been doing here the last couple of years, and everyone was up in arms. So I think that speaks to the superstars that Toronto has and the way that different teams have to go about things just based on their makeup.
And for the Islanders, you may see the benefit of that kind of approach come playoff time when everyone's a little more fresh.
Four.
Well, Scotty Mack is one game closer to getting the worst haircut in the history of haircuts.
Third down and a long one. Jacobs back in the game. The rookie for the touchdown.
Raiders with a touchdown with a minute to go to beat the Chargers 26-24. Raiders are 5-4, Scotty. Chargers were a playoff team last season, but they're now 4-6, and they need to win out. Phillip Rivers threw 3 interceptions last night, but even more telling was the Bolts' final drive, where they gained exactly 0 yards in 8 snaps. So my question to you, is Phillip Rivers done?
First of all, go Bills, go Colts, go Steelers.
By the way, the Raiders have a couple of gimmies over their next couple of games, too.
So. Yeah, just all those teams in the 4-ish loss range are in the Bills' case top wildcard team right now. I'm cheering for all of you not named Raiders. I can't believe this is happening to me, and I don't deserve it. I'm a good person. Here's what I think you asked the bang-on question here, Hugh. Phillip Rivers' contract is up at the end of the year. And that was a really rough night last night. This is a team that has not allowed 200 points defensively yet this season. They've got a plus point differential, and yet they are 4-6. They have not had the offense. I know Gordon wasn't with them to start the season, but they have not had the offense to put them over the top. When you consider some of the names who are going to be on the market this offseason, do the Chargers look to move on? Rivers is not a kid. How much more of your future do you want to invest in him?
Who was it that said it's better to move on from a player too early than too late? Ashley, you said that last week.
About Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
I think that it was Ross Tucker that said that, and I stole it from him.
That's fine. Here
we are. One of the things about Rivers is that he's still going to be a viable option in this league, though, because as we've talked about before, there aren't enough starting quarterbacks quality enough to count out someone like him. So, yes, he's 37 years old. He's on the downturn of his career. And I don't think he's going to be going to a contender contender and electrify the fans that are in the stands. But what he can do is, based on his experience, is he can bring a little bit of calmness, reliability, and consistency to one of those middling franchises.
Five.
The Raptors begin a five-game road trip tonight in New Orleans. The L.A. Clippers yesterday were fined $50,000 for Coach Doc Rivers' comments that Kawhi wasn't held out of Wednesday's nationally televised game with the Bucks necessarily for health reasons.
I'm not getting into it, so no is the answer. I think what we said, and whatever the release was, which I haven't seen, is the release.
You disappointed to be fined, that the organization was fined?
I love getting fine. Next is like, if you win a game, are you happy to win a game? You're always disappointed. Sometimes you agree with fine, sometimes you don't. It doesn't matter. Yeah, that's the one thing I've learned.
Kawhi was feeling pretty good last night. He had a game-high 27 in the Clippers' win over the Trailblazers. Now a $50,000 fine for an NBA team, especially one who's owned by one of the richest men in the world. Big deal. But what message did the NBA send yesterday, Ashley?
The NBA said, we went out on a limb for you, and we vouched for you, saying that Kawhi is medically unable to play, and we support your decision to sit him. Get the fans off your back. Get the fans off our back. But then Doc Rivers came out and said, yeah, he's fine. He feels great. And the NBA is like,
never felt better.
Damn it. We just tried to help you. And look what you did. So that's what the fine's for. The press release was a little bit convoluted.
Yeah.
It was, but that's what they're saying is, like, we tried to stick our neck out for you. You undermined our authority. So here's a fine. But what I said before, and Mike brought it up, the Clippers and Doc Rivers specifically were fined for tampering earlier in the season when Doc Rivers compared Kawhi to Michael Jordan and was like, who wouldn't want to have him? And now another $50,000 fine for undermining the NBA. If you told billionaire Steve Ballmer, all you have to do is pay $100,000 to get Kawhi Leonard on your team, he would be making it rain all over you in that moment.
It's one of those Clippers just kind of what Ashley said. It's just they get fined without him, with them, and they can't win.
Funny thing about the league saying, well, we stood up for you. It was not a secret that he was playing last night against Portland, even before he sat on Wednesday night against the Bucks. He can't play tonight, but he'll be good to go tomorrow. Here's the thing. Yeah, it's load incredible. Management. That's what it is. We understand that.
And we actually forget that he does have essentially a degenerative condition. It's an acute issue. So this is going to be like this for the rest of his career. Get used to it.
Six.
Toronto FC off to Seattle. A battle of the Sounders in the MLS Cup on Sunday. Meantime, New Zealand All Black star Sonny Bill Williams is coming to Toronto. The Toronto Wolfpack is paying the so-called LeBron James of rugby $10 million over 2 years, with Williams getting an ownership stake. Yesterday, Williams and his baby greeted Toronto fans.
Hey guys, Sonny here. Just a quick message to the Toronto fans and team. I'm looking forward to getting over there. Just want to say that I'm not coming over for a holiday, although my son might be. I'm coming over to do some work, and God willing, we can have a successful season on and off the field. Cheers, guys.
Adorable. The baby was kind of cute, too. Williams is a two-time Rugby World Cup champ. He's also an undefeated heavyweight boxer. Wolfpack begins play in Super League next February.
That's a lot of money to pay a guy. I mean, he's not coming over for a holiday, but he's coming over to bank some cash.
But this
you brought up a good point, Scotty.
This is the benefit of being promoted to Super League. It attracts, or allows you to attract, bigger stars. They got an awesome thing going on down at Lamport Stadium. The one thing I wonder, Sonny's going to find out, playing rugby on turf, he's going to feel it.
Is this comparable to when Major League Soccer signed David Beckham to the LA Galaxy? Is this comparable when Wayne Rooney took a spin? Is this comparable to a Michael Bradley?
It's in the neighborhood. A lot of the articles I've read about this guy saying his best rugby is behind him, just like Beckham's best soccer was behind him when he came. But it's in that neighborhood, I think, for sure. Yeah.
Shout out Wolfpack.
Yeah,
see you
Wolfpack
at a game, Sonny.
Eric Grossman.
Send on the tickets.
PR guy for the Wolfpack. Yeah, we like
don't
it.
Don't put him on blast. He's going to be getting all the emails. Hi, Eric. I heard about you on Leadoff today. Yeah. And
First dot last at wolfpack.com. I mean, I don't even know. We'll be in touch for a game
Eric
or eight.
Tickets at wolfpack.com.
Next season. Toronto FC, Seattle Sounders, MLS Cup, Sunday afternoon. Is this as big a deal outside of the diehard fan base this year as it was 2 years ago? Because it was crazy 2 years ago. We were hosting it. Of course, Toronto FC is going to Seattle. We'll discuss next.
Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Charles Davis at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, and I'll cry into my cereal over the Raiders winning last night, moving me closer to looking like Mark Davis for a week at some point in January or early February. Toronto FC and the Seattle Sounders, third time in 4 years, MLS Cup final, goes Sunday at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. Is this a huge deal? It's a huge deal for the diehard Toronto FC fans. I really got into this team a couple of years ago. Was at a lot of the games through the playoff run. Mm-hmm. Do you sense, and again, your own personal experience from a couple of years ago factors into this as well. Do you sense that this is as big a deal to the entire city this time around as it was 2 years ago?
No, it's not.
Is it because we're not hosting the game?
Yeah, it's because, listen, whether you like it or not, sometimes you need to take stock of your city and yourself and understand what it is. And Toronto is largely an event city, right? We sell out the Grey Cup when it's at Rogers Centre just a few years ago. But how many of those people actually went to an Argos game the following year? Probably not that many. I don't have the attendance numbers in front of me, but I would say there was probably a steep decline from the opening day game from the Grey Cup performance. Also, Toronto FC, soccer, international sport. Absolutely. People get excited for it. But again, is there a march happening through Liberty Village? Are there flares going up? No. So, of course, the fringe fans or the average fan is not going to be as invested, at least not in my opinion.
Will you be watching?
Yes.
I will be
watching for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, and I do know people who are going to Seattle. So we're rooting for Toronto FC on Sunday. Josie Altidore has said it will take a miracle, given that he's hurt, for him to be in the lineup on Sunday afternoon. More of that with Joshua Cloak at 8:30. Charles Davis next on the Raiders and Chargers. What is Philip Rivers' future beyond this season? And we'll tee up the big games of the weekend. Panthers-Packers, Seahawks, 49ers, and the Bills are into Cleveland looking to go 7-2.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Missed an episode of Lead Off? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead Off with Ashley.
Here's the deal. Everyone loves her. And right. She's so professional.
Ziggy.
Eggs for lunch? That's weird.
It's not weird. You're weird. Your girlfriend looks like mom.
And Scotty Mack.
I have these notes, but I gotta say, I'm just fired up to be here today. It's pretty cool. Woo!
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, I feel like Charles Davis is my lifeline here. I feel like I'm just going to throw it out there, and whatever Charles says, I'm going to believe, and we're just going to hope for the best. Charles Davis of the NFL on Fox is with us now, as he always is at 7 a.m. on a Friday. Charles, you remember a couple of weeks ago, I let you in on the poorly kept secret that I made a stupid comment before the season began that if the Oakland Raiders made the playoffs, I would cut my hair and wear it for a week like Raiders owner Mark Davis. What happened last night pushes the Raiders right into the playoff conversation. They have terrible teams on their schedule like the Jets and the Bengals and the Titans. I see a path to 10 or 11 wins in a playoff spot for the Raiders, but you're going to tell me I'm wrong because you don't want me to look like an idiot for a week, right?
Wow. Man, that's a lot of responsibility to start things off here.
Just tell me they're going to miss the playoffs and I'm good.
No, you're in trouble.
Yes,
you're in big trouble.
Charles.
You're in big trouble because right now, by you describing that haircut, I'm seeing not just you looking like Mark Davis, but maybe Ben Stiller as Simple Jack in the movie Tropic Thunder.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Listen, I'm here
now,
for it.
Now I'm in some pain right now. That one hurt me to even get there. But you're right about the schedule. And last night was such a pivotal game, and we all knew it going in. I mean, it wasn't like it was an original thought. You know, we were like, okay, will the Chargers win tonight and start that elevation that we're used to seeing from the Chargers the second half of the year, right? And it's almost like setting your watch, isn't it? The Chargers struggle in the first half. They get hot. Sometimes they make the playoffs. Sometimes they miss it by a game. The Raiders, we weren't really sure, but we've seen a little bit of evidence because let's be frank about it. What they did in London to Chicago, now that we look back, they're the ones that really kind of started Chicago's descent. And now you look at this Raiders team, they've lost a couple of games along the way that maybe they should have won. Maybe they're learning how to win now in the second year under John Gruden. That's a big deal. I still believe Kansas City wins the division, but Oakland has a great opportunity to compete for a wild card spot because they're not going to all be filled by all the other divisions. So this is going to be an interesting race. For your sake, I hope they miss it by a game. I really do, because I really don't want you to have that haircut.
Why would you take
really
all
don't.
The fun away from me, Charles? This is the only thing I'm living for at this point in time.
Ashley, I can't understand that you'd really want to look at that. I think in your mind, this is something that you're like, yeah, this would be kind of funny. And then about an hour in, you'd be like, oh, no. Get him a hat, please.
Charles.
Please get him a hat.
Charles, if you had $1 billion and you could look like anything, why would you choose to look like Mark Davis chooses to look? Like, who gets up in the morning and says, you know what? That's it. That's me right there. White tracksuit, Lloyd Christmas. That's me.
Well, you know, part of that is following the tradition of dad. And, you know, and when you do things for family, sometimes that part kind of gets left out. You know, it's an honor, it's a tribute, it's all those things. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to go with, and that's what I'm going to stick with, because anything else, I might get fined by the league myself. So I'm not going to go there.
Listen, I'm here for self-preservation,
and
my friend.
That part.
Okay.
But, you know, there's times, I'm sure, when I was, you know, at a certain stage of my life, I looked in the mirror and said, jump back, kiss myself. I'm headed out the door. As soon as I headed out the door, everybody said, you need to go back in. So you never know.
Shout out to glow ups. I think that's the common theme here. All right, let's move it along quickly here, because I do want to talk to you about the Carolina Panthers and their game coming up against Green Bay. Less so about the matchup specifically, but Cam Newton, IR, done for the season. So Kyle Allen,
By the way, Ashley, we talked about that a few weeks ago. That's one of the few I got right.
Yes.
I told you guys that was coming.
Yes, sing your praises. Let's toot that horn, because now it's
one of the few.
Now it's Kyle Allen's team, right? Does this change his approach? Does this make him feel as though he has a sense of pressure, or maybe on a positive spin, a sense of ownership around this team, since the big shadow is not looming over him that Cam Newton might return and take away what he's done for this group so far?
Well, based on the outside evidence we've seen, I think Kyle Allen has it figured out, because you saw what he did as soon as they put Cam on IR.
Mm-hmm.
Is he went out and publicly praised him and thanked him, you know, for showing the way, setting the example, you know, for being that guy, making sure that Cam Newton, you know, felt like he was still, or let everybody know, I'm not just taking over this team and jumping up on the table and go, okay, he's on IR, it's my team now. He'll just do it by his play. He'll do it by continuing to be himself. But I think for this team, is the best move that they could possibly make. If he truly wasn't healthy, you needed to go ahead and eliminate all the rest of the questions. You needed to eliminate the idea that Cam was looming and possibly could come back. Remember the loss they had, what was it, 2 weeks ago? And he's, remember that shot on the sidelines in San Francisco where Cam was sitting next to Kyle Allen?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a meme, and everybody was talking about it. And it was kind of like, hey, Kyle, yeah, now you know what it's like. I'll be back soon. Nope, he's not coming back. Kyle's got the team. The team has played pretty darn well under him. They just need to go ahead and acknowledge that and move on. But it does not have to be one of those things where Kyle Allen sees his power. We have a coronation. There's none of that. He just needs to go ahead and play. And ownership, management, they're the ones who have the big decision to make in the offseason. With or Cam Newton, what do we do? But I did hear someone in the airport when I was traveling yesterday. I heard her talking to a friend. She said, I'm a huge Carolina Panthers fan, and I can't believe with Cam, but we can trade him and get a number one pick.
Oh.
I felt like saying, I don't know how to break it to you.
Nope.
No one's given a number one for Cam. It's just not going to happen.
So what do they do with him? What's his value in your opinion? And who do you think would be, I guess, chasing after him in this day? Because I made the point yesterday that we saw what some rest did for the physique, the mental welfare of someone like Rob Gronkowski, who some people still think might come back. So this time off, although it's probably a bit of a roadblock in his career path, the way he sees it, it could do wonders for him. And I'm not saying he's going to be the quarterback that he was before, but I think he still has value in this league.
Yeah, agreed. He does have value in the league. It won't be nearly what his MVP level was. I mean, no one's going to trade a one, as we just established there, in my humble opinion. I would say probably the bidding starts as a third rounder. That's where I would say it would probably start. Maybe go a little bit lower than that, depending, and maybe a few other things that go into it. But here's the kicker. You ask the question, who is going to want to make the move? Because remember, Cam Newton, as great as he is, it's a different deal with him at quarterback, meaning you've got to invest entirely in Cam's style and what he does best. And there aren't many teams that do that. And so that's going to be the interesting thing. I've already heard, Chicago, they should do that. Matt Nagy has no background as an offensive play caller and a guy with a quarterback who moves like that, runs like that. And here's the other thing. He's been hurt each of the last three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
At his age, all the accumulated hits, it's going to take a lot for someone to say, this is where we go. Heard Cincinnati. Well, Cincinnati's playing so poorly. It's like, we're about to pick a quarterback number one. I don't know that we trade for Cam Newton if you're going to pick a quarterback number one. He'll find a place somewhere if indeed this comes to pass. But it may be a surprise place, and it may be a place where someone says, we're not going to give you a high draft pick. We're going to take him, but they'll also have an insurance policy in place, meaning another quarterback that's there.
With Charles Davis of the NFL on Fox, this is Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Charles is in New Orleans, where the Saints and Falcons will play this weekend. Dan Quinn feels like he's just riding this thing out. We'll move past that, though, Charles, because Monday night, San Francisco at 8-0 will host Seattle. And, with the 49ers, Tim Kawakami, who I'm addicted to reading from The Athletic, wrote a brilliant piece this week, and it's so true. Everything the 49ers are always relates to their relationship with the Seahawks. Now, it is clear, and I do declare my bias as a 49ers fan here, but it is clear to me that the 49ers are the better team, but Russell Wilson is the equalizing factor. Now, San Francisco has questions. Kittle may not play with a knee ankle problem suffered in the Arizona game a week ago last night. Robbie Gould, the 49ers kicker, has got a quad problem. He may not be able to go. They may have to go outside to sign a kicker for this game. We know that Quan Alexander is done for the year with the torn pec. How do you break this game down? The 49ers defensive line able to get to the quarterback, but Russell so often able to flush out and create plays. How do you see this cat and mouse game playing out, and who do you like on Monday night?
Yeah, everything that you put out there is perfectly on the table, and it makes so much sense. And I co-sign on Tim Kawakami and his writing. He's excellent. I've been following him for years. Let's look at it from San Francisco's perspective. Yes, they have some injuries, but they also are still pretty darn loaded. So if you're Seattle now and you're trying to do what you want to do best, which is run the football, it's pretty formidable front you're still trying to run against, isn't it? So there's no guarantee that that Seattle run game gets activated the way that it normally does. Second part is the wideouts for Seattle. Tyler Lockett's the one that no one talks about, except we're always talking about a highlight play he made, you know, a highlight play or two. But no one ever says, best receivers in the league, Tyler Lockett. And then you look up and watch him in primetime games and you go, how did he catch that? How did he keep his feet down? How did he even see that football? He does it every single week. He provides big plays for them. That allows DK Metcalf to continue to come along. I'm not bullish on the Josh Gordon signing, but I understand why they did it, because it's the type of environment, the type of head coach that gives them an opportunity to maybe they'll reap the benefits. I told you at the beginning of the season it wasn't going to work again in New England. I don't think it's going to work in Seattle over time, but we'll see what happens in the short term. Now, go ahead with San Francisco, and remember, Seattle's defensive front has not rushed the passer very well this year. So if you're Jimmy Garoppolo coming off the big game on Thursday night, yes, Kittle may or may not play, but he has to be extremely confident now, and they're still going to test the heck out of him in the run game. They're going to still see if Seattle can hold up in that. This is not the Legion of Boom. They're talented on defense, but they're not the Legion of Boom. I still think San Francisco overall has a little bit of an advantage in this game. But again, you know, big stage now, huge performances, and this is one the country grasps onto. Because beating up on Carolina, the country didn't really get on board with that one. This one they will, and I have to admit, my colleagues over at ESPN and ABC, congratulations. They finally have a Monday night game this year that feels like the Monday night games we all grew up with, right? Because this is the one, you know, this is the one we're all pointing to. And what a way to finish the week. These two going at it in prime time, that's kind of cool. I'm really excited about it. I still think San Francisco is a little bit better than Seattle, but you're right. Russell Wilson may be the greatest eraser in the league.
So it's inevitably going to be a dud of a game then after all this buildup.
10-6.
That's how it always works.
That's how it is, right? I actually, just to kind of jump on that thought, I was actually really surprised with Jimmy Garoppolo's only throwing 13 touchdowns. We were talking about it a little bit before. If you look at the success that San Francisco has had, I think most people would be surprised to see that just a Baker's dozen in terms of touchdowns with his team's level of wins.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, well, we all get reminded, because I think when we talk about offensive wizards and great play callers, immediately we think of throwing the football.
Right.
It's just natural, right? Every great offense that we've ever talked about in the NFL have had names that suggest throwing the football. West Coast offense, Air Coryell, you know, the silver stretch at one point in Detroit when we were running to run and shoot, all those types of things. The K-Gun with Jim Kelly. No one ever talks about, we are the biggest, baddest running team you've ever seen. Well, that's how San Francisco does it.
Mm-hmm.
Going into last weekend, they led the league in number of rushes and percentage of running plays, you know, throughout the season. Now, do you really think of offensive wizards that do that? Not very often, but that's who Kyle Shanahan is. It is a run-based offense, and he's done it with guys. Matt Breida, undrafted. Raheem Mostert, supposed to be a special teams guy. Wilson Jr., no one who knew who he was. Tevin Coleman was their most recognizable guy. Yet they continue to run the football and run it effectively. And that's going to be the beauty of watching them continue to go. Because I think if they continue to do that, Garoppolo will get better and better, and we'll see more performances like we saw on Thursday night against Arizona.
With Charles Davis of the NFL on Fox on Leadoff.
So we do want to get to the Antonio Brown stuff, but first, we'd be remiss if we didn't at least talk about the Buffalo Bills and everybody's favorite team to hate, the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland has not had the success at home, and when you talk about offensive strategy and what you're going to do to be able to get the most out of your team, what possibly, in your mind, do you think the Browns can do to get this one over the Bills? Because the Bills setting themselves up for 7 wins on Sunday if they win.
Yeah, with a very good defense and a reason to do that. And I love how you announced Cleveland as everyone's team, favorite team to hate. A friend of mine texted me the other night. He was watching something, and one of Baker Mayfield's commercials came on. And the reason I knew it was because I wasn't watching at the same time. The text said, all the text said was, would you just get her a straw for God's sakes? And that's all the text said. I said, oh my God, he's on Baker Mayfield again. So you're exactly right. People can't wait to take shots at this team. But this team sets itself up for it. every week, the things that you're discussing aren't always necessarily what went wrong or what happened on the field. We're discussing those guys changing their cleats at halftime last week. How do you not know the rule about the proper cleats? And does the equipment manager just get so overrun that he or she can't say, oh, guys, that's going to be a problem? Probably with the personalities they have. We're talking about that. One week we're talking about what watch OBJ's wearing.
Right.
We're talking about now, should we force feed the ball to OBJ? Why do you even have to discuss force feeding the ball to a talent like that? Why don't you just locate him and throw him the darn football? By the way, on that last play, it was a one-on-one. You're not going to give him a chance one-on-one? Mayfield's the quarterback. He should know that. Give him a chance with the football. Buffalo's defense going in, and then they go to Cleveland, correct?
Yes, they're in Cleveland.
Before the season, I think everyone saw this as a Cleveland win. I think Buffalo goes in there and gets them again. And, boy, we really got a lot to discuss at that point, because you're still sitting there waiting for Cleveland to find a way to get hot. We're running out of time. And all these conversations, 90% of them are not about how they're going to get better. 90% of them are all the issues that put them in the position they're in. What watch? What cleats? Should we do this? Should we do that? Let's talk some football, Cleveland, and maybe a chance to have a chance to win some games.
Now, Charles, before I let you go, just want to ask you about Antonio Brown really quickly. Released by the Raiders, the Patriots, absolute mess for the league.
You got to bring me down. Just, before we go at it.
We got to get messy, Charles. We got to get a little sloppy once in a while.
Man, you're harshing my mellow, as they say. Go ahead.
And if you're the league now, have you not had enough? He's taken to Twitter, taken to Instagram. I mean, I'm sure you saw the comments about how he's done with the league and then kind of backtracks later on. Is he never coming back again?
I don't say that. He's too darn talented in this league. There's always room for a rogue in the league if the rogue wants to act somewhat right. And here's the thing I would say if I'm involved with the league. I'd get all this stuff adjudicated as fast as I could with him, because he's almost turned, in some ways, they've turned him into a martyr-type figure. Because you guys might be surprised the number of people that are like, man, I can't believe how the league's keeping AB out. What? The league? Didn't he do that?
Yeah.
No, I can't. You know, league, they won't let him get signed. What? He's the one who wanted out of Pittsburgh, wanted out of Oakland. Found his way out of New England. New England. Yeah. How'd you find your way out of New England? It's pretty darn good there. The water's warm there, folks. So I don't understand that. But I am now reading, hearing, you know, friends of mine, people around the league. Yeah, you know, they're doing their best to keep AB out. I think AB's doing his best to keep AB out. But the league needs to get all this taken care of, interview him, do all the stuff. If there's something to issue their statement, issue their punishment, if there is, whatever. But get it out there so that everybody knows if there's a path back for him, and all the teams that are asking the league, should we sign him, what's the suspension going to be? Get it all cleared up so at least we know then everyone can make their decision about whether to bring him back or not. You guys know where I stand on that. He wouldn't be anywhere near my team. I don't care if I'm old for the season. I don't care if I'm perfect for the season, because I've seen him blow it up too many other places. There should be golden spots. You leave Pittsburgh, you're always a contender. You leave Oakland, well, they're 5-4 now, so you could have helped them rise up. You leave New England, enough said.
You're always great, Charles. And if the Raiders make the playoffs, I'm cutting my hair like Charles Davis, not like Mark Davis. That's the decision I've made. Well, thank you.
Well, that would make things perfectly easy for you, because there's not much to cut.
That's the plan. We'll talk next Friday. Thanks, Charles.
Bye, Charles.
Look forward to it. You guys take care of yourselves.
Charles Davis of the NFL on Fox. Steve Rapp is the host of Sports Interaction here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And you can listen to his program at 10 a.m. on Sunday. He is with us now for his games of the week. And, Steve, let's get right to it. Buffalo at Cleveland. This feels like a push, I guess, because they're giving the home team 3 points. The Browns are favored by a field goal.
Yeah, and I just heard Charles Davis talk about this one. But I just got to ask one question. When it comes to the haircut, Mark Davis haircut, you're going with the family size salad bowl or the smaller size soup bowl? What do you think is going to be required?
Soup.
I have been told, Steve, that we are going to hire a professional to do this. So I suppose it will be up to them.
You think he uses a professional? I think that's a little bit of overkill, to be honest with you. I'm pretty sure my granddaughter could do it for you. But anyways, all right, you mentioned it. You might wonder why this 2-6 team is favored over a 6-2 team. It's been fascinating, guys, to watch the number this week. Cleveland opened his Sports Interaction as a 3-point favorite. And while the public has bailed on their darling Browns, I heard you just talk about it, the books didn't want to come off the 3. When they finally did, they loaded up the 2.5 with juice. And what that does is keep the professionals off at 2.5 minus 25. Doesn't matter. The public has come back, pounded this one back to 3. I think this is a pretty good buy low on the Browns. Cleveland has faced one of the toughest schedules in the league, and the Bills one of the easiest. No team in the league has faced the Jets, the Giants, Bengals, Dolphins, and Redskins. The Bills have done that. They actually should be 6-2. Cleveland, far tougher battle-tested, and even if the Browns did manage to lose the first-time starter last week, look at the numbers. They ran 30 more plays. They had the ball 11 more minutes. They actually dominated Denver. They got little from 7 red zone trips. We've seen good running backs the last couple weeks. Really beat up the Bills' defense. Nick Chubb is one of the best in the league right now. He's averaged just under 100 yards per game at home. He's picking up speed. Good contrarian to go against the public. If you had been doing contrarian this year against the public, you'd be hitting at 57% this season. Fading the public on a trendy road dog is even more enticing. I'm going to lay Cleveland on -3. Going against Charles Davis and you guys, I think.
Another game we want to ask you about is Baltimore at Cincinnati. Baltimore 6-2, Cincinnati 0-8. The Ravens are coming off a big win against the Patriots, and the Bengals have not won this year. Can they cover 10 or more points?
Mike, you just set this one up to me perfectly. Baltimore opened 10-point road, favorite on the road. Public is on the Ravens. There are situational spot bettors out there. They look for spots where one team's on a crazy traveler, back-to-back. This one's full of them. The situational spot sets up perfectly for the Bengals. Bengals come off a bye looking for their first win of the season. They are now the only winless team in the league if they need any additional motivation. They're starting a new QB and that hasn't been bad for Denver and Carolina when your starter isn't very good anyways. We're getting double digits in the division. You know this is one of my personal favorites. You're getting a Bengals team that's lost by 1 to Seattle, 2 by Buffalo, 6 to this exact Ravens team. They get the Ravens primed for a huge letdown after a win so important to them that they pose for a team picture on the field after it. Desperate team off a bye versus a flying high team, primed for a letdown, plus 10 at home. Let's add another trend that I've uncovered here. Teams that beat the Patriots and open as 7-plus favorites are 0-8 against the spread their next game since 2003. I think I'm talking myself into this one a little bit too much, but I do like Cincinnati plus the 10 here.
Okay, is there any situation that sets up favorably for the Miami Dolphins? I know that they've been a little bit better in their last 4, considering their start was so deplorable. 13-plus points per game more they've been scoring, and they've allowed 17 points per game less against, but at the end of the day, they're on the road against the Colts.
Yeah, and there is a little bit of a situational spot here, actually, as well. I mean, Colts opened as a 12.5-point favorite at home. Money has been on the fish. It moved it down to 10.5 slightly, but then it's back up to 12. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be still backing this double-digit fish coming off their first win of the season. Lots of reasons, and here's a situational spot, lots of reasons for the Colts not to give their best here. They have a look-ahead date next week with a division rival in the Jaguars, who'll be coming off their bye. We'll get Nick Foles back for that game. The Colts got dodged a bullet with Jacoby Brissett not being seriously injured last week. But while his status is still questionable, I see no reason for him to play here, as they should be able to get the job done versus the Dolphins with Brian Hoyer. But either way, no real need to run up this score. If they do start Jacoby, you can expect a very vanilla game plan to keep him out of trouble. If Hoyer starts, expect a similar game plan, just trying to get through the game with a backup. While the Dolphins still have that rotting fish smell about them, they have quietly covered 4 straight games, while the Colts have failed to cover their last 6 versus teams with a winning record. In head-to-head meetings, the dog has covered the last 4. The road team has covered 7 of the last 8. And Miami has covered 5 of the last 7 and 6 of the last 7 in Indy. A big order for a not 100% Brissett or backup player to be asked to cover this big number, double digits. I'm taking the 10.5. A couple of real stinky dogs for me. There are actually 3 real stinky dogs for me this week.
Inside the Lines, 10 o'clock Sunday morning. Steve Rapp of Sports Interaction. Thanks, pal. We'll talk next week. Steve Rapp. Man, oh, man. the Miami Dolphins. I need the Colts to win that game. But again, I got to stop digressing over this Mark Davis haircut. Not that I'm obsessed with it. Last chance for you this week to get into the draw. And I mean, it can't be any other week because we're giving away Leafs tickets to tomorrow night's game against the Philadelphia Flyers. We will play Guess Who, as we always do on a Friday, and we'll reset the Leafs' win over the Golden Knights in overtime, and the Raps kick off a roadie. It's all ahead.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack.
Put your hands in the air right now, man.
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Carlson takes the pass on the left wing, gets into the Leaf end, puts the brakes on, trying to slide it around, lost the puck. Marner starting back with Tavares against Carlson. Marner closing in to Tavares. Goal! Holy mackerel! Some magic from the magician! And Tavares finishes!
And the Leafs got it done against Vegas, so Philly is in to Toronto tomorrow night. Into Chicago, the Leafs go on Sunday, and they're playing a ton of road games. The Chicago game Sunday night is the first of what will be eight of the next nine away from Scotiabank Arena, and only Boston is into town in that run, and that is a week tonight. And that will be Boston's last trip into Toronto this season, till, of course, April, when they probably meet in the playoffs. So 9-5-3. On pace to eclipse last year's point total, and yet the vibe around the team doesn't feel like 9-5-3 and doesn't feel like they're on pace to eclipse last year's point total.
Well, it's not the same team. They haven't played. They haven't dominated the way they did. Do you remember their power play last year?
It was good,
and then it wasn't.
But yeah. Here's the thing. There wasn't a lot of talk around how tough the team was because their power play was their enforcer. And what that does when you're on the ice and you have a team that's good on the power play, and I hate to keep referencing Mike Babcock's old teams, but the Detroit Red Wings, when you go on the ice against them, it is tough to play aggressive. It's tough to play tough against them because if you take any kind of roughing, you get your arms up, you take a stick penalty, you know they're going on the power play. They had one of the best PPs in the league, Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Lidstrom, and you knew it was going to go back in the back of your net most of the time.
Here's when it's going to change for the Maple Leafs. Here's where the run starts. So they're in Pittsburgh a week tomorrow night. Then they're in Vegas on Tuesday the 19th. You know what happens on Sunday night the 17th in Vegas?
A party?
Problems. Problems happen. Good problems happen. Oh. This team,
What are good problems? Can we go over the good problems?
Don't lie to me and tell me that not every human being on that charter flight doesn't have that date circled.
I know for a fact that when Vegas was announced as an expansion team, many of the illustrious NHL franchises save their rookie parties for their Vegas date. They might have done it earlier in the season traditionally, but if Vegas was in the first half of the season, they're holding the rookie parties there. But what I will say is, A, it's a smart move because Vegas is the best city in the world. So much fun. But also, you talk about chemistry, bonding, spending time together, creating stories, and making sure that you can speak to every person in the locker room kind of like a friend, and it's not just like, hey, what's up, pleasantries. Those are big moments for teams. So if that's what you're alluding to, I don't necessarily disagree with you.
If I'm Mike Babcock, practice is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the Monday. No, just like.
And I'm sending IV bags to everyone's room.
I'm looking at the schedule now. I'm trying to see where I would wedge in the rookie party. The Sunday night, it'd be nice to have a couple, you know, go have one of those 3-day breaks between games when you're on the road. But I mean, two can do it. I'm talking about like before a game, right? Because you go out that night.
If you spend 3 nights in Vegas before you play the Golden Knights, you may as well not step onto the ice. Just give them an 8-0 win and just go to the next city.
But you haven't heard many stories. Remember the talk about the team pro sports teams going to Vegas.
Yeah, and it was Vegas flu.
And it was always going to be like, well, it's going to cause problems for teams. It's going to cause problems off this. Okay, forget about what just happened a couple days ago with Kane.
I'm talking about that. I'm talking about the actual home record of the Las Vegas Golden Knights was almost immaculate because of the Vegas flu. And you can't tell me that there's no there's a coincidence there.
There, it is not a big of a deal as everybody thought it would be. This Vegas team is good. It's not because of where they're located. They're good. This is one of my favorite teams in the league.
They draft during
the expansion draft, they bring in guys high IQ. They don't do a top six and bottom six. And I talk about this a lot. They structure their team around three lines that can score, which a lot of teams don't do. They're a good team.
But no one's saying they're bad, but it just makes it worse when you come in and you're dehydrated and your calf's cramping because you decided to order another round of shots at 3 a.m. It makes it a little more difficult, even if you have a day in between going out in a game. Those are just the facts. I'm sorry. Vegas is a good team. Yes, point blank, period. The Toronto Maple Leafs experienced that yesterday. But when you go into Las Vegas, I do not care how much restraint that you have. You're getting into some trouble. And I'm not talking about I'm getting arrested and it's going to be front page of a newspaper or a blog kind of trouble. I'm talking about having the appropriate amount of mischief and then going to play a Las Vegas team who they're used to it, been there, done that. They've been living there a couple years now. The Vegas flu is real. You cannot tell me different. I'm so sorry, sir.
Rode the roller coaster at New York at 2:30 in the morning just for the hell of it.
Just to say you did it.
Well, if you're going to have a rookie, if you're back to the rookie party thing, because I'm on this for a second,
yeah.
It would be probably the best spot to have it.
Where was yours?
Oh, God.
What was yours like?
It was in with the Carolina Hurricanes in 2005, and it was in L.A.,
That's good.
And we went to the restaurant and we have your dinner and it was me, it was three of us. And we didn't have to do much. You have to split the bill, whatever it was, 10 grand a guy or whatever. And
classic.
No, but no they get a lot worse. There's some guys that pay like 25 grand.
So did they do any hazing or anything like that? Because there was an article that came out and it was how Zdeno Chara was bullied when he was a lot younger. And that's the reason that Boston doesn't do any hazing because he doesn't think that it helps with the culture. He thinks it's an antiquated practice.
And what he's talking about, the big one for a lot of teams now, okay, they don't do any of the stuff that you hear the stories of
horror stories
in like junior hockey.
Right.
When I went as a 16-year-old to the Kingston Frontenacs.
Bad.
I got lucky because that summer, CBC came out with a special on all the hazing in the league, and then that forced the league to clamp down and said we hear of any kind of rookie parties, and they're going to come up with a huge fine for these teams. But with the NHL, it was one of those things where, you split the bill up and they made us sing the national anthem from our home country.
So
I mentioned it a little bit. We had a guy from Sweden, a guy in the U.S., and then I had to sing O Canada.
I wish there was a tape of that. We would definitely play that.
It's a tough listen.
We might have you do it. Just Ziggy, take us back to your rookie party. Give us your best O Canada at some point. All right, phone lines are open, 416-870-0590. We're going to play Guess Who. This is your last chance to get into the draw, which we will make in about 15 minutes' time for tickets, a pair of them, to see the Leafs host the Flyers tomorrow night. And we also want to get you a pair of tickets to the Hyundai James Naismith Classic College Basketball Showcase presented by Citi. That's on November the 16th, so 1 week from tomorrow. Guess Who? Next.
Subscribe to the Lead Off Podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead Off presents Guess Who?
All right, this is for a pair of tickets to the Hyundai James Naismith Classic presented by Citi. That's 1 week from tomorrow, November 16th. And it's also to get you into the draw, which we'll make in about 10 minutes' time, for a pair of tickets to see the Leafs host the Flyers tomorrow night down at Scotiabank Arena. We are playing Guess Who. So you've got 45 seconds, and we give you one of two categories. Category number one, famous sports mustaches. Category number two, famous soccer players. You got 45 seconds. One of the hosts will give you the clues. Get as many right as possible. If you get stuck, just say pass and we will move right along. Let's begin with Adam. Adam, good morning. Do you want famous sports mustaches or famous soccer players?
I think I'm going to go with the mustaches.
So here we go. Okay, first one. Handlebar mustache, Saskatchewan boy, wore number 17, Leafs captain.
Wendell Clark.
Yep. Another former Leaf, played with Daryl Sittler, won cup with the Flames, number 7.
Lanny McDonald.
Yep. Most famous wrestler of all time, wore a bandana.
Hulk Hogan.
Yep. One of the best, if not the best, basketball player ever, won 6 NBA titles, wore number 23. Nickname Air.
Michael Jordan.
Yep. Current coach of Chiefs, former Eagles. Redhead.
Reed.
Yep. Arizona native, current Toronto Maple Leaf assistant captain, first overall.
Matthews.
Yep. All right, coach. Skit on Saturday Night Live, Dub Bears. Vest and glasses.
It was Mike Ditka, the Bears.
Still very good, though. 6 correct.
Yeah, despite Mike's panic voice giving the clues. Where's a banana? Where's a
banana? Oh, is that what he said? Oh, yeah. We're going to get that one. All right. You got a challenge on your hand, Gregory, because Adam got 6 correct. You've got famous soccer players, and Ashley's going to take you through
it. Hi, Greg.
Hey, what's up?
I'm doing well. You have to beat 6, so we got to run the table here, okay? Good luck.
All right. Don't give me the Mike panic voice.
I'll try my best. The clock starts now. He's the TFC captain. He's a bald guy. U.S.
Bradley. Yeah.
He's from Brazil. World Cup winner.
Ronaldo.
No.
Ronaldinho.
Nope. His name rhymes with Gelé. He's the player of the century.
Play. Yeah. Play.
He's an English player married to a Spice Girl. Bend it like...
Oh, Beckham.
Argentina, Barcelona. Huh? Argentina. Yep. Headbutt, World Cup winner, coach of Real Madrid.
Zidane.
Yep. Portugal, Juventus.
Ronaldo, Cristiano yep. Ronaldo.
And then Argentina, co-player of the century, hand of God goal.
Maradona.
Hey! Whoa! Buddy, with time to spare.
Wow.
I mean, what it 1, 2, 3?
Yes, Gregory.
7-6.
Yeah, that's the best we've had.
Yeah, well, hate to see it, Adam and Mike.
That's the best run we've had among contestants. Number 1 and number 2. That's the best clue ever. Rhymes with Gelé. Rhymes with Gelé.
He wasn't getting it.
Yeah, what?
Pelé.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Well.
I mean, it rhymes with Gelé.
I'm sorry if I'm just giving good clues. It's not
Are
my
we
fault.
Allowed to do that? You're allowed to do what
sure,
rhymes
next,
with?
Sure, next time okay. You get Hulk Hogan, just say right. Rhymes with Bogan.
I'm sorry, all right, you're out here giving numbers. Number 23, basketball. Like, hello.
Rhymes with Bulk Bogan. Josh Cloak, who covers the MLS for the Athletic on Toronto FC and the Seattle Sounders, playing their third MLS Cup head-to-head matchup in 4 years. It'll go in Seattle on Sunday afternoon. We'll tee it up. And Elliot Friedman, he's with us each and every Friday morning at 8 o'clock, and he joins us next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley.
Let me check my list of powers and weaknesses. Ability to do anything, but only whenever I want.
Ziggy.
We're going to skate to one song only. Lady Hump by the Black Eyed Peas.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
And Scotty Mack.
If you don't do cardio, the workout doesn't count.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Elliot Friedman in just a minute. Shout out to Hugh Burrell, who just did the update. So you can't see it, but he has dressed himself to the nines. Something's going on in Hugh's life today.
He's suited up, and I hope it's not a funeral, but he looks really good.
Yeah, he brought the suit in with him this morning. I saw the bag.
Well, you saw the bag? We just saw the suit.
Hot. Damn hot. Real hot.
Like chicken, like fried chicken grease hot, okay? Scalding.
Like TFC sausage
Hot.
Like, I see what you were trying to do there, but like,
be more funny.
Didn't he say something hot sausage? No.
Who? Mike Babcock?
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Do we have the drop? Can we give some context?
Morning, guys. How are you? Thanks. You ever been to the TFC game and had an Italian sausage there? They're unfriggin' believable. Unbelievable. What's going on?
What's going on? No pause for the laughter. Just right to
What's going on? Like, you look like a hot sausage from TFC today.
Coaching.
What? Stuffed into a casing? I swear to God.
Coaching a hockey game tonight, not doing yuck-yucks as the headliner after. Our NHL insider is from McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora. He is Elliot Friedman with us each and every Friday morning at 8 o'clock. Babcock has such a weird way, Elliot, of disarming you, right? Like, were you there yesterday morning when he steps up? He's like, hey, so you ever had a hot dog at a Toronto FC game? All right, questions. Like, what?
Yes, I was there, and we were all looking at him really strangely. But the thing that was going through my head, and you're always, as a reporter, you're like, do I go down this rabbit hole or do I just get on to the next question? Because the thing that I thought about was TFC hasn't had a home game in how long? So why did that pop into his head? Like, why is he thinking about TFC sausages when they haven't played at home in about 3 weeks?
Just a craving. Maybe that's why, because he hasn't had the opportunity to, like, you know, shovel one in a while.
Well, I just think he's got enough power. I wonder if he just tells them, like, he's sitting in his office after practice one morning, and he's hungry, and he's like, fire up the grills at TFC and taxi me over, or Uber me over a sausage.
Or
he probably could.
From BMO, yeah. That's an egregious misuse of power, though, I will say.
No, I don't think it is. I think if I had that much power, I would definitely do things like that.
I think he's probably, Elliot, I think when he's home on an off day on a Sunday afternoon and he goes to a Marlies game next door to BMO Field, he gets a couple delivered. There's no question in my mind. No question.
And also, last night in the pregame, Sean McKenzie kind of followed up by asking him about a favorite meal, and he said, I like Italian, but I'll generally go with my wife's cooking because she's a great cook. And the three married guys on the panel, Dave Todd and myself, agreed that that was the best answer.
Well, Sean McKenzie's mustache is becoming distracting here in Movember. are you getting to that point yet, too?
No, if you've seen my summer beards, you know that they grow in pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
But my mustache is taking slow to develop. I'm not getting as good growth as Sean is. I'm hoping in another week it'll be different.
Elliot, I want to dig into the game from last night now. I'm not sure what you make of these last two games, but the defense side of this Leafs team has definitely gotten better. But one of the downsides is I don't see them with the same offensive punch that we're used to seeing. Is that one of the downfalls when a team kind of is not known for defense, starts making more of an effort on that side?
Well, I think that might be true to some degree, Mike. Like, I thought as that game went on, Anderson really bailed them out. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I thought they battled. Vegas is a tough team. I thought they really battled them well. I thought in the last few minutes, like when Marchessault busted in alone, they took that penalty for too many men. Anderson made a huge save on the penalty kill on a Pacioretty setup. I thought they were much more competitive against that team. But I thought late in the game, you know, Anderson showed that why he's worth every penny that they paid him. But the thing I really look at in these last two games is, and I agree with you, is they haven't been at their best offensively, and they still grinded out two wins. You know, like, I understood what Babcock was saying the other day, like when he said that win was beautiful against the Kings and people were all over him for it. I can understand why as a coach he thinks that, because they weren't doing a globetrotter routine and they still won games. And that's the way I would look at that one too. I agree they weren't at their best offensively and they still won the game. And it helped that the goalie, I thought at the end, he was huge, because Vegas could have won that both in the last seconds and at the beginning of overtime.
Guy, I want to ask you about Dermott. Have you noticed he only played 8 minutes?
Yeah, I was wondering if there was something going on there. Like, I didn't I didn't notice it during game, but I saw the score sheet after the game, and I was like, okay. I kind of wondered if maybe he's not healthy or anything like that.
Would you say that you can add Morgan Riley to that pile of players that aren't fully healthy, and what do you know about what's going on with him?
Well, we did a thing last night, the burning question segment, one of Amber's crazy ideas. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions we were talking about was who's your Leaf MVP early in the season, and Riley would be my guy. He clearly has not been healthy, and he's not giving us much information. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. But he's at least started to practice with the regular team again. So that says to me he's at least getting closer. And then at the end of that game, or late in that game last night, he took the shot off the foot.
Yep.
And you're sitting there and you're saying, oh boy, like if they lose him, it's a huge problem. He's clearly not 100%. He's battling through it. And he's not, believe me though, he's not giving us any intel on what it is exactly that's bothering him. We probably won't know for a long time.
Would you say that there's an argument to be made though, that if something is ailing him, which it clearly is, it would be better early in the season to kind of take care of that as opposed to potentially make it worse when we know and we've seen, and I know that everyone keeps coming to the St. Louis Blues and the fact that they were dead last by December and able to turn it around. Would there be an argument to be made that it might be smarter to make sure that he's okay first instead of risking piling on injuries?
Well, I think you could make that argument. The thing is, like, from outside, I could see how any one of us could make that argument, Ashley, for sure. I just think that we don't have the information that they do. And if you take a look at what they've been doing lately, I think you could argue they have been doing that.
Okay.
We thought Tavares was coming back against Philadelphia. They waited 3 more days and put him in against the Kings. Hyman, you know, we thought Hyman was coming back this weekend against either Philly tomorrow or Chicago on Sunday. And Babcock said last night that that's not the case, that he's still a little while away. Or at least, what did he say, about a week away?
Yeah.
And he's coming back from an injury too. So that actually does say to me that if guys aren't ready, then they're not playing.
Now with these question marks around Dermott, and obviously we know Riley hasn't been practicing a lot, you mentioned in 31 Thoughts this week that they will have to go to 20 and 21 players. Do you think that's a smart idea by keeping that amount of players on the roster, especially when they have question marks with injuries?
Mike, I don't think they have a choice. The cap is going to dictate that they're going to have to do that. And, you know, the one thing that really helps them is that their American Hockey League team is right next to them. And you know, they're going to be on the road a lot. The November is after this weekend, it's a really road-heavy schedule. And the thing is, like, you know, in Toronto, you can get anywhere from Toronto. As long as your team is based there, it's not hard to get guys places. Like, it's not like Ottawa, where there's no city in the world you can get direct to from Ottawa. The thing is that they're going to have no choice. The salary cap's going to dictate that for them. So whether you think it's a good idea or it's not a good idea, it's the reality of the situation. And I think you're going to see some guys bouncing around a little bit, up, down, around, to maneuver depending on how healthy guys are.
And what teams are calling into the Leafs about wondering if they're going to have to move one of their big contracts? Who do you think they're going after?
I think a lot of teams were. Yeah. I think as they got closer to healthy and Dermott was coming back and Tavares was coming back, and you know Hyman's coming back sometime in the next little while, I heard there were a number of calls. And I think the question would be, you know, who didn't call? And I would guess that's a very low number, because a GM isn't doing their job if they don't pick up the phone and call or text Kyle Dubas and say, okay, now that you're getting healthy and we know you're tied to the cap, what are you thinking? And, you know, I think right now they are determined that once they get fully healthy and Hyman's back in the lineup, they want to give this group a run with their strongest possible team and see what it means. And I think that's exactly what they're going to do. I think they've told everybody that the big names aren't going anywhere, or the higher salary guys aren't going anywhere until we get a good chance to see this group. So, you know, obviously we knew Patan and Marinchin had been available. They were put on waivers yesterday. It's going to be when the time comes that they need the Hyman spot. It's going to be one of Shore, Spezza, Timoshov that is probably going to be the move. And we'll see what happens when the time comes. But for the big guys, the big salary players, that's not happening, I don't think, until they see their group for a while.
Will Jason Spezza accept a demotion to the Marlies?
He hasn't really, that really hasn't been asked. The one thing about him is that he loves to play. And, well, first of all, you got to put him on waivers, right? So I would be really curious to see, would anybody claim him? And I know that there's been a lot of talk up in Ottawa, would the Senators claim him? So I think that's your first question. I think the second part of that is, if it's the Marlies, I could see at least the chance that he says yes, because he loves the sport. It's in the city where his family is. And you never know in this league, what's the old line? You plan, God laughs. Toronto could plan that, maybe that he's not coming back, but you never know what could happen that he comes back. And we know that the general manager at least is in a spot where he likes the idea of having Jason Spezza around. So I think this is being discussed. I can't give you a 100% answer, but Mike, I could see a case for both sides.
With Elliot Friedman, our hockey insider on a Friday morning, this is Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Taylor Hall's agent is to meet with Ray Shiro.
They met yesterday.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. I read your 31 thoughts and always forget that it's written on Wednesday. So tomorrow becomes yesterday, becomes today. That meeting occurs. I would imagine if I'm Taylor Hall's side, it's like, hey, I'm going to get paid regardless of where I play. So Mr. Shiro, what's the plan here? How do you think, or what have you heard about how those talks went?
Well, I almost think it's the other way around. I don't think you need to sell Taylor Hall on New Jersey. I think he knows what is going, like he sees it. He knows what's good and bad about the situation, right? He's been there, for 3 years. He's seen them at their best and he's seen them when they're not at their best. I don't think New Jersey needs to say to Taylor Hall, we're going to do this, 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 and this. He's seen it. He knows it. He saw what they tried to do in the off season. I think the question almost comes the other way, and it comes from the team to from the team to the player. And the question is, if we make you the offer that we think we need to make, are you going to sign it right now? And, judging from the fact that there's not, like, look, the two sides are going to try to keep it as quiet as they can. They're not going to come right out and say, we said this or we said that. But my reading of the situation is that Hall probably wants to see what's out there. And that's not him saying, I'm not going back to Jersey, but it's him saying, I might want to see what my options are. And I think the decision is going to be the Devils. Do we wait or do we let this play out? Or do we say we can't take the chance and we have to be proactive? And I think ultimately they will make the call here. They will make the determination on that. And, I think the thing is they've got an experienced general manager who's seen a lot, who's not afraid. And I think he's the kind of guy who will say, if I don't like our chances here, or I don't want to risk not exactly having a guarantee, then he'll go out and he'll see what the market is.
So two questions. First, do you think Taylor Hall is the kind of person that's going to say, listen, I don't want to have these contract talks right now until the season's over, and then kind of put the Devils in a little bit of a jam? And second, you strategically maybe put items 12 and 13 on your 31 thoughts about Taylor Hall meeting with Ray Shiro, and then following that said Colorado's going to make a big splash, go big game hunting. Are those two things related?
Nothing gets by you, Ashley.
I'm very astute.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I had some Avalanche fans who tweeted at me and asked me that same question. I do think that, like, I think Colorado, you know, they destroyed Nashville last night. Even with two injuries, they're still a really talented team. But when those guys get back, I think they know that they're going to be – they're in the conversation. They're a legit contender. They've got a lot of assets. Yeah, I do think that, you know, if Hall is available, I think they would be a team that would look at it. But I think there's going to be a lot of teams that would look at it.
Like, Edmonton?
You know, yeah, I've thrown that one out there too. And, you know, I just decide when I come on radio how many, you know, brush fires I want to start in a particular day.
How much gasoline you got with you that day.
Yeah, that's right. Do I want to pour it on or just, you know, do I just want to let like a mild leaf fire this time? But, you know, I think there's going to be a lot. Now, the one thing I have to say about the Edmonton thing is, you know, Ken Holland there, how much does that change everything? Because it's a new regime. I don't know. But I believe the previous regime had at least talked about it. Do we, when he's available, do we try to make room to go get him? And so maybe it's different now. I'm not sure. But put it this way, it's not always easy to trade a guy who isn't signed. I think if it comes to that, the Devils will be in a position where there's a lot of interest and there'll be a lot of teams who look at it saying, you know what, if that's a guy we can go with for this year, you know, we're going to do it because he can be a difference maker.
With Elliot Friedman, what are the next steps in this Jets-Bufflin process? And where is this headed, in your expert opinion?
I think that the next steps, like, it's kind of out of the teams and the players' hands right now. Like, this is a bigger deal than the Jets and Bufflin. This is now league and players' association. Because there's going to be a dispute about how much he should be paid, when he should be paid, and, you know, what the schedule should be. I mean, ultimately, number one, Bufflin has to decide, and because of the surgery, it probably won't be for another month or two, if he's going to come back. That's number one. Then number two, they're going to argue about, you know, if or when or how he deserves to be paid. And that's bigger than the organization and the player. And then number three, the question is going to be is, where does he play? I think the Jets want him back. I'm not convinced that Bufflin wants to go back. I think, you know, these are, you know, the line I've been using a lot in the last 48 hours. And this is why we tell people never to loan money to or from friends or family, because money causes all sorts of problems. And that's what this does. So I think the question is going to be, does Bufflin want to play for the Jets? But I think that probably the next big decision is, does he want to play? And I think that determines a lot of other things about his future.
As we let you go, Elliot, on what date this month does shoe polish get painted onto that duster of yours?
It doesn't happen, Scotty. Like, you know, here's the thing, the way I look at it, okay, is I'm married. I have nobody to impress. Like, I'm done.
How does your wife feel about that?
That's terrible.
Is she listening right now?
Oh, yeah. She's heard all this stuff before.
I'm sure she's thrilled about it.
What's that? How
does she feel about it? I'm sure she's thrilled about it.
No. She's like, don't worry, you can talk a big game on TV and radio, but when you get off the phone, we know who's in charge.
Yeah, you're just track pants free Friedman every day. I'll get it out of my mouth at some point. Track pants, yeah, Friedman at home.
I've got the Beckham pants on this morning, and I feel very comfortable.
Always good to chat. We'll do it again next week, Elliot, and we'll be watching tomorrow night.
All right, guys. Take care.
Hi, Friedge.
Thanks.
Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Joshua Cloak of The Athletic on the MLS Cup Final in just a moment. But as you know, we've been taking your calls all week long on the VTech listener line at 416-413-4141. We're looking for the best Toronto sports take that you have for us. And with that, here is the VTech wake-up call of the week.
Yeah, this is Steve. To me, it's simple. We've seen what Marner and Nylander have to offer. We've overpaid for them. They're young. I'm sure they've got lots of upside. All we need to do is call up New Jersey and offer up the two of them for Taylor Hall. It's an obvious trade. Benefits both teams. The Leafs are ready to win now. Hall's proven. New Jersey's rebuilding. These two guys are young. If Dubas can't do it, tell him to give me a call, and I'll make the call for him.
Steve in Stouffville, Taylor Hall for Marner and Nylander, straight up. Need some of that J.P. Weiser's that we... God. Steve in Stouffville.
Roasted.
You have 590 seconds. Bless you. To call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590 or *590 to win the weekly prize pack from VTech and to qualify for the grand prize. Two tickets to see the Raptors and Bucks on Friday, April the 3rd. Two tickets to see Taylor Hall and the Leafs without Marner and Nylander versus the Habs on Saturday, April the 4th. Two tickets to the Hockey Hall of Fame and a two-night stay at a hotel in downtown Toronto. The VTech wake-up call. Contest runs right until the end of the Leafs and Raptors seasons, so keep bringing your hot Toronto sports takes like Steve in Stouffville's, and you could be a winner with VTech and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Toronto FC into its third MLS Cup final in the last 4 years. Joshua Cloak to break it down. Reds and Sounders on Sunday. We discuss it next.
Missed an episode of Lead Off? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Demand. Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, no more off-air conversations that aren't interesting.
Who sweats more? What?
Oh, my God. Congratulations to Ian in Toronto. Don't know if you have hyperhidrosis, but you are the winner of a pair of tickets to see the Maple Leafs host the Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow night at Scotiabank Arena. Ian was one of our winners in our contests in the 7 o'clock hour this week, and we will do that all again next week for a future pair of Leafs tickets, probably for the Boston game, if not much, much further down the road, because apparently the Leafs are never playing another home game over the next month and a half. Yeah. I'm following your eyes, Ashley. You keep...
And now I'm looking...
So, Mike Zigamanis is sweating profusely right now, and for no good reason. It's very cold in the studio. My hands are like ice blocks right now. But he has pitters the size of, I would say, a Whopper. Not a regular hamburger, like more of like a wide circumference.
Cheeseburgers.
No Whopper. It goes literally from your back to your side areola, so...
Why don't you ever say anything when he has them, when he wears a t-shirt?
Listen,
in the studio?
Don't make this about someone else. Deflecting is not cute. You just own it. You're like, yeah, you know what? It's healthy to sweat.
I actually don't think I do. I've got a lot of problems. Pit stains ain't one of them. I got 99 problems.
I would say Scott's more prone to sweating on the back.
Well, that's because I'm wearing
underarms. Maybe I get like behind the knees a little bit. But anyway, the moral of the story is we're a greasy, greasy group.
You know what's funny? Joshua Cloak is on the line and he hasn't hung up yet. So that makes him...
Because it's relatable.
An absolute saint of a human being to sit there and listen to that and then want to talk to us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I feel it. I don't own a single white shirt because pit stains have ruined me. So I get it. I get it.
It's relatable. Gray in the summer, way off limits.
Can't happen.
Yeah, gray I can deal with, but white, no, there's not a single white shirt in my closet. It's just I've learned over the years.
Josh covers the MLS for The Athletic, and he is in Seattle. Of course, Toronto FC, the Seattle Sounders, will play the MLS Cup for the third time in 4 years. Toronto losing the first one in penalty kicks in 2016. Big 2-0 win a couple of years ago at BMO Field, and they play at CenturyLink Field, the home of the Sounders and Seahawks, on Sunday afternoon. Just very quickly here, Josie Altidore, Josh, it sounds to us like there's no chance that he's going to play. He said earlier this week it would take a miracle.
Yeah, and he revealed yesterday, actually, in his press conference that he still hasn't kicked a ball in his, injury recovery. And as I understand it, that's something that's pretty important in soccer. So I don't know.
You don't say.
I don't know how likely it is. that being said, I mean, it's Josie's their guy. Josie's the one that they re-upped, you know, ahead of the season. And he is, when he's in form, he's one of the most prolific and dangerous goal scorers in MLS. If you would have said to me before that TFC could have made it to MLS Cup final without Josie, I would have been as shocked as I would be, you know, wearing a white shirt. But the point is that it's very tough to keep him out of the lineup. So it's a safe bet to say he won't be in the lineup, but I wouldn't put anything past Jose Altidore right now.
So what is it about this group then? Because I feel the same way. If you told me that Jose Altidore wasn't playing, I'd be like, oh, okay, so it's probably not going to be a season where Toronto lives up to the expectations that they had for themselves. But yet, here they are. And what do you point to as one of the major reasons that they've been able to find success without him in the lineup?
I mean, if you look at their 2017 team that won MLS Cup, won the treble, arguably the best MLS side of all time, they played this beautiful possession-based soccer. They kept the ball on the ground. They moved the ball around a lot. And Greg Vanney has done a great job this year of getting the team to buy in to a more defensive style. You know, and Richie Larea said yesterday in his press conference that Greg has encouraged them to just be animals defensively. And so what you're looking at then is a team that has to increase their work rate, and they have to work a lot harder off the ball. And that's not very sexy stuff, but, you know, this team has bought into that. And so if you watch them, especially against Atlanta, they didn't look very convincing, but they, you know, they adopted that mindset that kind of says, we can get this done. We just don't have to do it in the most aesthetically pleasing way, because at the end of the day, the results are what matter. And so I think in that regard, you're going to see a pretty boring, you know, first 45 minutes against Seattle. But, you know, if you're the ones raising the trophy at the end, you know, you're not going to complain, right?
Josh, the loss of Sebastian Giovinco, because we were talking earlier on the show this morning, the vibe around this, and I think Ashley's onto something when she says, of course, that Toronto is an event town, and the MLS Cup is not in Toronto, it's in Seattle. So there's a disconnect in terms of geography. We'll all be watching on Sunday afternoon, but we're not going to have that feel in the city. The feel around this team pivoted. It changed a little bit. Giovinco was such star power, arguably the best player ever to play in Major League Soccer. They go and get Pozuelo in the aftermath of that. What role has he played with this group, and how has the subtraction of Giovinco changed Greg Vanney's approach to how he structures and schemes for this team?
I mean, in Giovinco, you had a player that could do a lot of everything. He was a player that could set up forwards. He was a player that could play that final pass. He was a player that could then score goals as well. And he was a player that just kept opposition back lines really nervous all the time. It's taken some time for Pozuelo to grow into that role, because he came into this team, you know, from the outside, it looked a little bit like he was a Victor Vasquez replacement. He was the player that would be setting up Jose Altidore. But with Jose Altidore out, he's had to grow into that number nine role, that forward role. And he's had to be the one that's scoring goals. So I don't know if you can ever replace Sebastian Giovinco. I mean, when you lose him, you're down to essentially one key forward and not two. And that hurts. But again, what he's done is he's turned this team into a team that is now not a team full of stars, but a team full of workers and worker bees and people that, you know, will just run the hell out of other teams. Sebastian Giovinco wasn't always known for his running. He would just deftly find open space. But now you have, you know, wingers and wide players that will just run and kind of be relentless. So again, the way that Greg Vanney has gotten this team to just work and frankly work a lot harder than those 2017 teams at least looked from the outside, that's the change he's had to make. And you know, if you're just watching as a bystander, it's been pretty impressive, because that kind of buy-in to that kind of exhausting style of play, you don't get that from a lot of teams, right?
Josh Kloak is covering the MLS for The Athletic. He is in Seattle. The MLS Cup, Toronto FC, Seattle Sounders, goes Sunday afternoon at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
These two teams met twice, 2016-17, now meeting again. But the first two were in Toronto, now we're in Seattle. Does home field or home field advantage matter in this case? We all know Seattle Stadium, it can be one of the loudest in North America.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's it's huge too. I mean, you know, they're talking about, you know, having 70,000 people in there, and those are European soccer numbers. And I think, you know, if you ask players, a lot of times some of them will say, well, we like kind of being on the road together and you know, staying in the hotels together and bonding that way. But there definitely is something to, you know, to being part of that routine that you do all the time, because Seattle can treat this, because the game's at noon their time, and that's when they generally practice. Their bodies are used to it, right? Like, this is a practice day for them in a way, and TFC are dealing with that time change. And, you know, again, they're going to have to kick off at what feels like 9 a.m. to them, and that's really uncustomary for them. So I think in that regard, it does matter. The home field advantage matters, but maybe the time change matters that much more.
Before we get you out of here, Josh, this Toronto FC team, I think, is exceptionally underrated in terms of the sports hierarchy in the city. And, you know, they're up against it. You have the NBA champion Toronto Raptors. You have the Toronto Maple Leafs that have been stalwarts in this city forever. Do you think that this is one of the teams and one of the eras that sports fans are going to look back on and kind of look at with regret and say, man, I wish we kind of jumped on board a little bit more, because their run thus far has been so impressive?
I mean, I think if you ask people around Toronto FC, that's kind of what they're hoping to avoid. You could argue that soccer, compared to, you know, most other sports, is a sport that if you spend money and if you spend a lot, you can see results. And even though TFC lost Jovinko,
yeah,
they were once again the highest spending team in MLS, and their goal is to do that every single year. They have the commitment from MLSE that they can spend a lot. So I don't think they want this to be, you know, a dynasty, as it were. I think they want this to just be another season of in a part of, you know, greater sustained success. MLSE is going to continue to spend. I mean, I think when we talk about Jovinko and Pozuelo, we forget that MLSE spent more money than they ever have to get Pozuelo here, and they're prepared to keep doing that. I mean, it's been reported that if TFC win, Michael Bradley has a $6.5 million contract extension that kicks in. That's in MLS, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I mean, yes, you can call them underrated because they're up against such heavy hitters in the Leafs and the Raptors, but they don't see it that way. They don't see this as part of a dynasty. They see this as kind of setting the standard of excellence in MLS. And I think if you look at their results, the you know, three of the past 4 years, you could probably agree with that.
I like that. Not a dynasty, but a legacy, Scotty.
I'm wistful.
Yeah, it's
I like
nice.
That. Josh, thank you so much for your insight this morning. We'll hit you up again very soon. It should be a blast on Sunday. And of course, we'll all be watching. Catch up again.
And in dark shirts, of course.
Always, always.
Absolutely.
Thanks for getting up early, by the way.
Abso-freaking-lutely. Yeah, it's 5:45 in the morning out there in Seattle. Josh Cloak, MLS writer for The Athletic. We will tee up the Air Canada fan flight, tell you how to qualify to win that chance to see the Leafs in Florida in January. And our technical producer, Ryan Mann, he's been up to no good. We'll play it for you.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
TGIF. And the reason I say that is because around this table this morning, we've had a case of the Fridays.
Most famous wrestler of all time wore a bandana.
Where's a banana?
This day is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
His name rhymes with Jelle. He's the player of the century.
You're just track pants Friedman.
Come on, try getting it out.
Oh, no.
Banana. I was thinking he has a yellow. It's yellow. It's the
bandana.
Same thing.
Bandana.
His bandana's yellow.
This is
bananas
Hulk Hogan.
Yellow.
For sure.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, okay. For sure. The only thing I was like, well, he wears like the little Speedo, and sometimes that's called a banana hammock. And I was like, maybe they'll agree with that. Like, I don't even know. Anyway, today's been a disaster. The pit stains are acceptable because that's like stress sweat for you. But here's the thing. You guys have it so lucky. It's unbelievable. Think about this. A guy comes up to a girl, pitters, just like disgusting, like greasy upper lip. And he's like, I don't know. You just make me so nervous. And girls are such suckers. They're like, oh my God, it's okay. I'm not that intimidating. A girl comes up to a guy with pitters, like, what's up? Can I buy you a beer? You're like, calm down. I'm married twice, 16 kids, happily.
Polygamous right here.
Yeah. It's just
many kids to raise.
It's such a double standard. Like a girl has pitters. It's over. It's over, baby.
Yeah, you put somebody in a headlock, that's like taking a bath.
I feel like I should go and put my jacket on right now. If you get pitters, what do? Do you change your shirt or do you just...
Well, if I'm at home, probably, yeah. But I also don't think I suffer from that. Like I said in the last segment, I've got 99 problems. Pit stains ain't one of them. Also, your poppies.
My poppy's on today, all right? Don't get mad at my poppy now.
It's having an issue again. It's fine.
Oh
my gosh.
Man, we're just picking you apart. That's He's walking right. out of here That's with fine. A complex.
I'm like, what time does that bus leave to Queens? We got a UFT game in Kingston tonight. It's like,
oh, fun.
Yeah. We got a back to backer. We got Queens and we got RMC.
What do you think the chances are you go 2-0?
Well, some of the players are listening right now. So we need to work hard and keep doing things the right way and good things will happen.
So not a high chance.
What are the chances?
So not a high chance. So you guys are going 1-1 at best. Got it.
You got a night game and a day game tomorrow in Kingston.
Yep. Both in Kingston.
So you're on a speaker at Stages at 1:45 this morning.
there might be a Stages visit at some time.
You just want to see if they remember who you are from 20 years ago.
Oh, every time I go back.
Can I get a table? You know who I am?
Kingston Frontenac in 1999.
Literally, the people working at Stages weren't born when you played for the Fronts.
Well, you'd be surprised. The people that still work at Stages.
You know what? That's a fair point.
Good show is next. We're back at 6 o'clock Monday morning. Enjoy your weekend.
I thank you. And from the bottom of my heart, I love you. Goodbye.